after the surgery, he came in the next morning and he said, actually, surgery's, it's gone quite well, but we think you might never play rugby again. Having them there at the end when we won it and having been able to celebrate with them, that was, for so far in my career, that's what will stick with me for the rest of my life. Just want to be known that I get everything I give is 110%. I didn't leave anything out there.
Hi everyone, I'm Connor Nolan and welcome to The Sit Down, the podcast that explores the mindset, motivations and opinions of the elite talent and brands represented by Sport Endorse. Season 2 of the podcast is proudly sponsored by Nosen, an Irish-made natural body care brand specifically tailored for athletes and active people. Their range of products are formulated with natural and proven active ingredients and designed to promote better performance and quicker recovery. Environmentally conscious, sustainable and made with natural ingredients, their products are absolutely amazing. Today's guest is current rugby player John Porch. John boasts an impressive sporting resume, having represented Australia at the 2016 Rio Olympics and his adopted Connacht in the Pro 14 and Champions Cup competitions. John and I had a great conversation discussing his incredible return from injury to compete at the Olympics, positive experience with the Sport Endorse platform, and aspirations for the future. Enjoy. John, you're very welcome to the sit down.
Thank you for having me.
Connacht rugby player, Australia Sevens international and an Olympian. That's quite an impressive CV.
It's not too bad, yes. It's quite good and I'm very proud of it.
So take us back to the beginning. I mean, what got you started playing rugby?
If I can remember what my mum told me, I was about 2 or 3 years old. She got me a football. And I think the Wallabies were sort of in their golden era around then, you know, the late 90s, early 2000s. I picked up the footy and my mum was a rugby head. She obviously watched the Wallabies and that. And I said that I wanted to be a Wallaby when I grew up. And I think from there, that's sort of what has encapsulated my sort of love for rugby, I guess you could say.
But am I right in saying that you were very nearly a rugby league player rather than a rugby union player?
I think if my dad had his way, I would definitely be a rugby league player. So I got split parents. I grew up with my mum, so that's where I obviously held on to my rugby. But dad was a rugby league head, and he said if I grew up with him, I would definitely be playing league. And I went to a school also that was league dominated. And in my first year of high school, they didn't actually have a rugby team, and they nearly forced us to play league. But a lot of the boys in my year actually loved rugby, and a lot of the parents sat down and with each other and sort of went to the school and said, no, our sons deserve a rugby team. So we actually ended up getting one. So I did play one game of league when I was 13. I absolutely hated it. I thought it was the most boring thing I've ever played. So thankfully, we got that rugby team put together.
Absolutely. But I mean, you suffered a very serious injury very early on in your professional career. I mean, talk us through that and your recovery process.
Yeah, so in 2013, so going on eight years ago now, I was playing for a team in Sydney. I moved from Tamworth, where I grew up, a small country town, down to Sydney, because that's sort of where you want to go if you want to make it in rugby. And I was playing for one of the club teams in Sydney, Northern Suburbs. It was just a normal sort of round game, and we were on top of a team quite well, and just a freak accident sort of happened off the kickoff, and I got tackled with the ball, and their body trapped my foot between the ground in a position that it didn't want to go, and I compound fractured and dislocated my left ankle. And at the time, I thought that it was just the way that it felt. I just thought I'd rolled my ankle. But when I lifted my leg off the ground and my foot was still perfectly on there, I knew something wasn't right. So that's when shock set in, and I don't think I've ever screamed more in my life. But that was a big turning point in my life. Yeah, I didn't know about this because obviously they'd given me morphine and that to go to the hospital, but apparently the doctor's first thoughts when I got to the hospital was we're going to have to amputate it. And went after the surgery, waking up and hearing that, I was, you know, that throws you around a bit. It's a pretty big curveball to hear. But then after the surgery, he came in the next morning and he said, actually, surgery's, it's gone quite well, but we think you might never play rugby again. And so as a 18-year-old kid that only lives off rugby, that was pretty big news to take. And then as my recovery sort of progressed, my ankle, you know, it was doing things that they didn't think it was going to be doing again. I had a physio at the time that used to be with the Wallabies back in the early 2000s, and he was exceptional. And I wouldn't be where I am today without his help, for sure. And, you know, my recovery started getting better and better, and it looked like I'd be back in within 18 months of sort of post-surgery. But for some unknown reason, I got back to the rugby field in 10 months.
Wow. I mean, it's just incredible, really. And I mean, you know, when you look at how things progress after that, you came back, showed strongly, were called into the Australia 7 setup, and then just 9 months later were selected to represent Australia at the 2016 Rio Olympics. I mean, was that something you could have ever expected?
No, not at all. You know, when I got back from that injury, I still had 1 year, we call it Colts, which would be sort of like under 20s or under 21s. Still had 1 year of that before I progressed into, you know, opens or men's, I guess you could say. So I just wanted to get back out onto the field there and just have some footy, get some footy under my belt and just enjoy the game again, because I was sitting at home bedridden for 2 months while the boys were in the finals watching that. You know, that absolutely killed me. And so just to be back playing footy at the time was amazing. And then the next year after that, I progressed into the men's side of it and made the first grade team. And then, you know, that's where sort of things just started unraveling there. I made then the, it's called the NRC, in Australia, National Rugby Championships, which is just some teams from like Sydney, Brisbane, Melbourne, Perth, sort of just above the club level. And then from that, that's where I got plucked into the sevens. And it all literally happened within the blink of an eye. And I was into the Australian sevens set up. And the rest was history. And I literally couldn't believe that it all happened within the space of probably a year and a half of breaking my leg so severely.
Yeah, no, it's a real, I suppose it's a real source of motivation, I'd imagine, for a lot of athletes who've been in similar positions. The opportunity to go to the Olympics is something that probably most athletes really dream about. I mean, what was it actually like to get the chance to go and compete, you know, as a member of the Australian?
It was weird enough, you know, growing up, there was no avenue for rugby at the Olympic level. You know, as you grow up, it's all about the World Cup. And, you know, that is, and it still is today, a goal of mine to go to the World Cup. But, you know, as I got into seven sort of late in my schooling years, and then just after I left school, that's sort of when they were pushing for rugby sevens to be involved as an Olympic sport. And it was growing as a sport in general. And I was fortunate enough just to, you know, I loved the idea of sevens and the way the game ran. It was so exciting, so fast-paced, sort of how I like to play the game. And when I picked up that sort of style of rugby, it, you know, really suited me. And I didn't have more fun than doing that at the time. And I was just lucky enough to get that opportunity and to be in the program 9 months out of the Olympics. But just to be in the program was good enough for me at the time. You know, it was my first professional sort of contract. And so that, for me, that was a big achievement. But then I sort of got 5 tournaments under my belt. And the coach over here at Connacht, who was my coach back at the Australian Sevens, Andy Friend, he liked what he saw. And, you know, he took me to Rio. And, you know, I would never be more grateful, because the life-changing experience, and one that I didn't think that was going to happen. I was just happy to be a part of the team at the time.
There's a lovely video of your mum presenting you with your jersey before the Sydney Sevens tournament.
Yeah.
How special was that moment? Because it looked, I would imagine that it wasn't just yourself, it was your teammates as well who were in a similar situation, but it just looked like a really special and lovely moment.
Yeah, excuse me, shivers thinking about it. No, that was an incredible moment. You know, the good thing about Andy Friend is he really drives family and making sure that the family's so, because they're the reason that we do this. You know, without our families driving us to games and, you know, paying for all our equipment and all that sort of stuff, we wouldn't be in the position that we're in today to be playing the sport professionally or even just for fun on the side. So when our parents got the opportunity, or family members, it wasn't just parents, got the opportunity to give us our jerseys at the Sydney Sevens, it was so special. Because my mum wasn't able to come to the Olympics. We did something similar at the Olympics where family members that were there, they got up and read letters out to the boys that were in the team and stuff. And you know, my mum wasn't able to come, but for her to be there at that Sydney Sevens, and don't know, that was sort of a dream come true for me, for her to be able to present a national jersey to me, for it to mean so much to her after all the hard work she's put in, for me. It was incredible. And then we went on to win it in front of our family, and then also the Australian crowd at our home tournament. It just made that whole weekend is something special. Yeah.
Yeah. I can see even now just how much it means to you. And course, yeah. You know, when your playing career is, you know, as long in the background, that's something I imagine that you'll always reflect on and hold dear.
Yeah, definitely.
You've mentioned Andy Friend, who's obviously the current Connacht coach and your Australia Sevens coach at the time. And he was obviously the catalyst for you moving to join Connacht. Prior to that, had you ever considered playing Northern Hemisphere, let alone in Ireland?
No, I definitely hadn't. So when Friendy was at the Sevens, and then he sort of finished up in 2018, before he had announced that he was going to Connacht, to be fair, I'd never heard of Connacht rugby. I'd heard of, you hear of the Munsters and the Leinsters back down in the Southern Hemisphere, but I'd never heard of Connacht. But once he sort of he left, I started watching the rugby. It's a different game over here, as everyone says. You know, it's more of a kicking predominant game. Looking at it, I thought it probably doesn't suit the style of play. But you know, coming here, I've adapted, and it's been a good change. You know, to get and learn a new style of rugby. Which is always going to help if I do ever go back home. You can never be narrow-minded in saying that. So, watched Connacht, and you know, I thought they looked like a good team that was growing. And when I was given the opportunity to come, I couldn't say no.
Yeah. You're here, what, three, nearly 4 years now at this stage. I mean, how have you enjoyed playing that different style of rugby?
At first, it was a very big learning process. You know, back home we're taught to never really kick, run everything, and then over here is kick first, run second. But it's opened my eyes a lot. You know, it's more about taking opportunities when they come, and I think back home we can get stuck in that sort of run mentality, and you see that like Wales and that, they're doing it so well now, and they're a very kick predominant team. Like, how effective it can be when you actually give the other team the ball and force them to make the mistakes, and then you sort of rally off that. It's been a massive learning process, and I'm very grateful that I've been given the opportunity to actually do this. Yeah,
seeing players like CJ Stander and James Lowe link in with the Irish squad and make such a huge impact, is that something you'd hope is on the cards for you long term?
I don't think I can link up like they have, but. Because I've played for Australia, so I'd have to be. I don't even know what the laws are for that. But I think that those guys that have come over here, and you know, they've done their 3 years, and then they've dedicated themselves to the Ireland jersey, and the things that they've shown they can do. But not just that, they've bought into the Irish culture and shown that, you know, they're really proud to be a part of that. It's just exceptional. That each player brings something different from what they've brought from New Zealand or from South Africa that, you know, you might not get over here as well. So it's added to the Irish rugby and given them a different perspective as well on the game, which is amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, what we've kind of seen over the last little while is that rule around foreign-born players is constantly moving. It's very fluid. So, you know, you're still quite young. You never know what's going to happen down the road. Looking at the current climate and, I suppose, uncertainty around fixtures recently, how difficult has it been to keep motivated over the last year?
I think the lockdown at the start of last year came at a really good time for myself, because I was actually able to sit down and really hone in on some certain skills. You know, last year I was playing wing a lot, but I did see myself as more of a fullback. I've played fullback mostly growing up, and that's sort of where I wanted to be. So for myself, over that lockdown, I sat down and honed in on a few individual skills that could put me in the best stead to sort of take that fullback spot. And for me, that was mainly around kicking, obviously coming from Australia. So just being able to motivate myself in that, and then see the success of what I was able to do in that lockdown, and now bring it into my game. It sort of kept me motivated and known, and now given me the confidence that I can sort of, you know, do that role at a starting level.
Yeah. So obviously we're conscious that with COVID, there's a number of new protocols and routines in place. So for you personally, how's your training been affected by that?
At the start, we were all training from home. And then when we sort of got clearance to go back in, it was very little groups. I think we're only able to train six, in groups of six. So at the start, it was very different, very weird, because you had new lads coming into the team, and they were only sort of they only got to know five other people within their group. Where, you know, back in the normal days, you'd be meeting everyone first day in, you'd know the whole squad within that sort of first week. But it was a lot different coming in those little groups, a lot more individualized. But also for those new guys, a lot of them have said that it was quite good, because they sort of got to meet people slowly instead of everyone sort of being thrown straight in front of them and trying to remember everyone from the first day. But it was weird just being in those little groups at the start. You know, if a few people come in unmotivated, some days you got to try and pull everyone together. And when you got a bigger group, it's easier to thrive off other people if it's only a few people that aren't feeling it for that day. So that was a big change, is, you know, noticing when some lads are not feeling it. And as COVID's been, it's been a tough time for everyone. So not everyone's going to be up for it on any particular day. So that was a big notice that I sort of saw. But having to wear masks in the gym, this day and age, it's tough, because you're in there trying to do a full-on gym session and you can't take your mask off. Little things like that you took for granted back pre-COVID, which has definitely been the biggest change. Yeah.
Yeah. So for you now, I suppose, let's say your pre-match routine, what does that look like now? So in terms of, you know, how you and the team, let's say for an away game, how do you kind of, you know?
So for an away game now, we would have used to travel probably the day before we were playing. We'd travel over there, stay at a hotel, play the game, maybe travel back the next day, so stay the night after the game. Now it's all we have chartered flights, so we'll fly out. If it's a UK game, we'll fly out the day of the game, and then we're usually straight back on the airplane after the game and back home, which is actually not too bad, because, you know, you actually do take the comfort of your own bed for granted sometimes. So getting back after a game, even though it may be at, you know, 1 a.m., 2 a.m. that night or morning, it's actually quite good, instead of having to get up at 9 a.m. the next day, get on a flight, and you're not back until 3 p.m. in the afternoon.
That's great. I suppose maybe looking at some of the kind of the off-field activities in that, and specifically in rugby, you know, how important do you think sponsorship is for athletes to be able to succeed at an elite level?
I think sponsorship is a big thing to not just succeed at an elite level, even to get into that elite level. You know, we need the grassroots of all sports is where you sort of find the elite athletes, and without sponsoring the little fish, you're not going to get the big fish in the sea, I guess.
Across the board, do you think that it's probably difficult for athletes to secure a sponsorship or gain the attention of brands?
I think it can be, yeah. I would say if you haven't really got a name for yourself so much in the community or that same, you might not be outgoing, or you're not well known, or for whatever reason, it is very tough to first and foremost get that the eyes on you to get sponsorship and get your name out there. especially if you're not confident in, you know, endorsing yourself in the public eye, which I'm definitely not. You know, I keep quite reserved. I don't like doing that too much. You know, it can be quite tough.
So as many of our listeners will know, we launched the Sport Endorse platform to support athletes secure commercial opportunities. And as an athlete who's used the platform, what's your experience been like?
It's been a great experience so far. Everything I've had to do with Sport Endorse, you know, I've worked with a few different companies on it, and everything has been fantastic. You know, I haven't had an issue with communications with anyone, or anything on any front at all. It's all been very friendly, very welcoming. Sort of took the platform as well, took the pressure off, you know, trying to find those things yourself as well, having to stick your nose out there and, you know, maybe getting turned down. It took that away. You know, it's very organic in the way it's all done.
And for you, I suppose you're kind of one of our success stories in the sense that you've managed to secure a couple of brand ambassadorships through the platform. Do you want to maybe tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so I've had some good things come up for myself. Work with Nursan, and they're a sort of skincare brand, you know, that works with active people and sort of fits right into my lifestyle. Also done some stuff with Irish Biltong. You know, lovely snapper, love Biltong. You know, going to South Africa for the Sevens every year, we'd always stock up on the Biltong. So to be able to have something like that over here that tastes exactly the same is exceptional. You know, I worked with Apex Nutrition just on trying to build some more muscle for myself, put on a bit of muscle weight, you know, something outside of everyday sport and just like focusing on what I eat and sort of meal prepping and meal planning has been great as well, that I wouldn't have sort of looked at if I didn't have Sport Endorse to put that in front of me, really.
So for any athletes or brands that are perhaps considering registering to the platform, would you recommend it?
Definitely, I would definitely recommend it. You never know what's out there, and it's an easy way to find stuff that you might not have thought that was out there in the first place. And for brands, it's an easy place to find great, friendly athletes that are looking to help endorse your business.
Longer term, and I suppose looking beyond your sporting career, what are your aspirations?
That's a good question. I think most people in rugby would say they'd want to be a head coach, and for myself, I definitely would like to pursue down the coaching side of rugby, but it's more fickle than the playing side of it. There's far less head coaches out there than rugby players, so it's a very tough avenue to get into. So that's definitely one side that I'd love to, but outside of that, I've got a big passion for Indigenous people back home, and more so how we get them into sport and in particular into rugby. Because at the moment in Australia, I think there's only been 15 Indigenous Wallabies, if I'm correct. And if you look at that in terms of participation between Indigenous people in like rugby league, let's say there's far more numbers in rugby league than there is in rugby, and why that is and how we can sort of encourage them into our game, because we know, especially in sevens, how good they can be and what they can provide to rugby as a whole. If you look at the Ella brothers and what they did for rugby in Australia, that can be such a benefit to Australian rugby, and we need to go down that road quickly.
When you think about that transition away from playing into perhaps coaching or other kind of development roles, is that something that excites you? Is it something that you think you'll be disappointed when the time comes, or I suppose, look, you're still a young player. Is it something that just hasn't really crossed your mind yet?
I wouldn't be wrong if I said it hasn't crossed my mind yet, but also I have to know that an injury can happen any day that could stop my career at a heartbeat. And if that does happen, or when that does happen, I have to be ready. And I think it will be tough, but I've got to be excited to move into that as well, because I know rugby's not here forever. So, you know, working on networking outside of rugby and how I can get into these sort of frameworks early enough so that I'm organised when the time does happen, will probably put me at in the best position to leave rugby.
When you think about, I suppose, the time that, you know, you do finish up your career, I mean, how do you hope to be remembered as a player?
I'd just say I'd hope that I was remembered as someone that gave everything, was loyal and to the team, whoever I was playing for, honest. That's probably, yeah, just want to be known that I get everything I give is 110%. I didn't leave anything out there.
Looking back over your career, and it might be hard to choose just one, but what's been your favourite sporting moment so far?
It'd probably, outside of making it to the Olympics, it was a bit of a sour taste in my mouth because of how poorly we went there, coming eighth. So outside of that, it would probably have to be winning the 2018 Sydney Sevens, when, you know, having, as I said before, having our families there present jerseys, having them there at the end when we won it, and having been able to celebrate with them. That was, for so far in my career, that's what will stick with me for the rest of my life.
And then, what's one piece of advice you'd give to any aspiring athletes?
Just have fun. As long as you're having fun, it doesn't matter what sport you're doing, have fun, and then try as many sports as you can as well. Don't be set on one sport too early, because, you know, that could hurt you in the end. Play as many sports as you can, make as many friends as you can, and just enjoy it while you can.
Nice one. That's great. Well, listen, with all of our guests from a team sport, we like to, you know, finish off with a couple of quick fire questions and put you on the spot. So we're going to ask about your Connacht teammates.
Yep.
You ready?
Okay.
Best dancer.
It'd have to be Alex Wooten. He thinks he can twerk like a girl.
Worst fashion sense.
I'm going to go with Ben O'Donnell.
Dressing room DJ.
Connor Oliver or Abraham Papili.
Who's most likely to sleep through their alarm?
Abe. Abe as well, yeah, definitely.
Who's least likely to answer their phone if you called?
Probably Bundyaki.
Who's the fastest?
It'd be a tight one between Alex Wooten and Matt Healy, I reckon.
Team Joker.
Team Joker. Probably Tiernan O'Halloran. I think he's a comedian.
Who's the messiest?
Jesus, I'd say all of us are the messiest. There's not a clean one in there.
Who's most likely to be late to training?
One of the boys has slept through his alarm for Matthew Burke, so it goes to him as well.
And finally, who thinks they're the most intelligent?
Who thinks they're the most intelligent? Paul Boyle.
Brilliant. Well, listen, on that note, we'll bring this week's episode to a close. John, thanks very much for taking the time to chat. Best of luck in the year ahead.
No, thank you for having me, Connor. It's been good fun.
That's all for this week. Thanks once again to John and to everyone continuing to download, listen to The Sit Down. We truly appreciate your support. Thank you to our sponsors, Nuisen. You can find them across social media or at www.nuisen.com. If you're interested in partnering with any of our talent, the Sport Endorse platform is now live. You can review and engage talent at www.platform.sportendorse.com or download the Sport Endorse app through the Apple Store or Google Play. Be sure to follow Sport Endorse on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And until next time, take care.